Welcome back to the Bob Davis Podcasts, live from the studio, Friday morning. I got both dryer and washer on. And it's so funny because during the week doing podcasts, I'm real sensitive to ambient sound going on in the house as well as outside. And then when I do these on Fridays, I don't even care. If the heat's on, the washing machines are on, but in podcast 508, the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, number 29. And I can't forget to mention Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul. Very quickly, Ryan Plumbing and Heating does great emergency service, residential and business. Now, I've been talking a lot about Ryan's business service because if you have a business and you have plumbing problems, heating and AC problems, air conditioning problems, you want to have somebody on call that can take care of it and take care of it quickly and do it right. And that is what Ryan is all about for business, but it also goes for residential. It's good to get the AC checked. A lot of people have already done that, but we're heading into the hot weather. 651-224-4771. If you're in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, you can call 612-927-6488. Hint, both numbers work. That's kind of a holdover from the old days because Ryan has been around for so long, they have two numbers. But you can also check him out online at ryanplumbing.com. Great website with lots of information about plumbing as well as resources for you at ryanplumbing.com. Again, they're on University Avenue in St. Paul, just west of the state capitol. Think Ryan Plumbing and Heating for emergency service and for business. 651-224-4771, 612-927-6488. In Minneapolis. They go metro-wide from St. Paul, which means wherever you are, they can get a plumber near you. Okay, let's get into the first segment for this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit the BobDavisPodcasts.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. This is a new show, so I take a little time at the beginning of some of the shows I do week to week. If you're a new listener, to let you know a little bit about who I am and what I do and what I am doing with this radio show that has a long name, the Bob Davis Podcasts Radio Show. So, after doing radio for many years, I'm a radio guy, the last 15 or so in talk radio, I decided to take on something completely new in digital media. I started podcasting. Now, if you don't know what a podcast is, I feel the need to explain again. Most people know, but if you don't, there's no shame. A podcast is simply audio on demand delivered over the internet. You choose what podcast you want to listen to and listen whenever you want on whatever device you want to listen on. Now, I started podcasting in 2009, and I have now over 500 podcasts available at the BobDavisPodcast.com. I really started podcasting in earnest in 2013. And one of the things I have learned podcasting is that podcasting is a different medium from radio. And there's a lot of content in podcasts that either you don't hear on the radio because radio just doesn't do that kind of content anymore. And there's reasons for it. I'm not criticizing radio so much as just explaining the differences between the two mediums. Or there just isn't time in the radio method, in the standard commercials and the amount of time that you have to do in each segment. So you don't have time to do what you can do in podcasts. Most of my podcasts are anywhere between 30 minutes and 45 minutes long. And the thing I learned is one podcast can make an hour or two of talk radio. So the mission of this show is to bring content from my podcast back to the radio. And then I do some original content like this for the radio show every week. Now, this week, I'm going to do something that I've been wanting to do in this show, and that is this. I do multiple podcasts during the week, so usually I have two or three, sometimes four podcasts to pull excerpts from to put in this show. But this week, I decided, after doing kind of a podcast at random on technology, that I would excerpt content from just one podcast, that technology podcast, because I loved it, and I've gotten a lot of great reaction to it. This was, a talk that I did about technology becoming industry. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that when you make the leap from theory to testing to the technology to then industrial, you know, industrial meaning wide uses in society and the economy and, you know, throughout the system. And today we are seeing all kinds of new technology ideas, which essentially are the building blocks of a new world. And it's starting to come pretty fast and furious. You're hearing a lot about it in the news. Driverless cars, robotics, autonomous machines and autonomous software, drones. There's now a drone that is a drone type of a device that you can fly yourself that doesn't require much flying experience. You just have to learn how to fly the drone. And if you do something wrong, you just let go of the stick and the thing stabilizes. You also have drones being used on factory floors that combine robotic technology with human operators who are actually at a remote location. And so it's a combination of a human being and a robot that advances the concept of smart machines that have a lot of operational uses. And they're using them on the factory floor, on the retail floor. They're actually using them in medicine where doctors at a remote location, and they can use a machine like this to do operations. So we have all these things, and we have all these things all the way to the things that we see every day, the things that we've been using for 40, 50 years, like pumping our own gas or using ATMs, and then lately these electronic cashier stations, which are starting to proliferate everywhere. And you're starting to see them in fast food, you're starting to see them at the grocery store and so forth. These inventions and many others are disrupting business, they're disrupting the political process, society, and people's personal lives in positive and also negative ways. And I could go on and on about the positive and the negative. You know, we all hear about social media and people that are stuck to their phones doing their social media. Those are positive and negative results. But it isn't that there are positive and negative results. What's interesting to me is that this disruption is happening, whether we want it to happen or not. It can't be stopped. It's a tide that comes from all of these devices. And most of the time, the things that you hear are negative. You really don't hear the positive things that come from it. And it reminds me of the turn of the century when people were all upset because of cars and eventually flight. And people were saying, you know, if man was meant to fly. And I hate to use that because it's kind of a, you know, standard, kind of complaint about how people respond to technology. But you are hearing a lot of that kind of stuff today. And it seems to me, and I'm going to talk about it in this show, that our political leaders nationally, our political leaders at the state level, and also local leaders seem to be completely unprepared for this tide that is rising, this river that is about to crest with all of this technology and all of this revolution that comes with it. It seems to me that our leaders are actually taking us in exactly the wrong direction, where they're taking us to a more centralized authority, even authoritarian systems that really are all about control rather than collaboration and decentralized authority and more personal liberty. The technology that we're bringing into the world really wants decentralization. It wants collaboration. It wants more personal liberty. And it seems like the systems that we're constructing are trying to force this sort of authoritarian or centralized idea of control. And it just isn't going to work, in my view. What am I talking about? Well, I'm talking like ideas like trade protection, government-mandated wages, minimum wage and minimum incomes. Examples would be the president's executive order on overtime regulation, increased regulation in general, higher taxation in general, and central state, and especially central state and city planning for a vision of the city, which is rooted in the early 1900s or the 1950s in the United States. And it's almost as though it's a utopian vision that may not have even existed in the early 1900s and in the 1950s. It just looks good in the pictures, and people's memories of it are great. But I don't know that living in 1920 Manhattan or in 1920 Chicago or in 1920 Minneapolis or St. Paul was that great. Same with the 1950s. And we're being fed this vision versus allowing the future to be determined by individuals. And this kind of policy, this kind of idea, this kind of generation of policy ideas seems to be the norm in American politics. And these ideas are really incompatible with the kinds of technologies being developed and the uses of these technologies that are going to end up being built into the base of the next world that is coming into reality very, very quickly. So in this show, I'm going to talk about technology and the city and the future. So part of it is that I really don't want to talk about presidential politics. I did do a podcast about that. If you want to hear it, go to thebobdavispodcasts.com. People are changing because the tools we use are changing. So we're going to talk about technology in this particular show. And we're going to start with technology and its development into industrial uses and what that means for urban planning to start with, because that was the, I read an article about urban planning and the driverless car that kind of sparked this whole discussion. And then we're going to move on to talk about the impacts of technology socially and politically and some other ideas and systems that are going into place out there. Coming up, the driverless car is coming and it's going to challenge a lot of assumptions about urban planning. One of the effects of this technology may be the introduction suddenly of a lot of open space. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcasts radio show. What's great about this show is that it's an interesting thing to take podcasts that are 45 minutes long and condense them. And this week I did something, as I said in that opening segment, that I've been wanting to do for a while, which is just take one podcast and make an hour of radio out of it. And it's still condensed. That's the thing that's interesting about the difference in the two mediums, what you could do in podcasting versus what you can do in radio. And it kind of changes the nature of what is said and how it is said. So that's kind of cool. Getting ready to head back out in mobile podcast command. And I often tell people who ask, well, where did you get this? Because it's a Ford 2000 Ford Super Duty 450 diesel ambulance. It's a great piece of machinery. It just runs fantastic. And I'm getting ready to head out. I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do. I might go, well, I would have to decide now, I guess, if I decide to go to South Dakota for the last primary, which is June 7th, so it's just this coming week. But it came from xgovernmentcars.com, and I've been doing business with their xgovernmentcars.com for a long time, Ed Johnson. They are now open in Forest Lake, Minnesota, with a huge one-acre lot with a big selection of Crown Vicks, Chevy Impalas, Dodge Chargers. They have the Ford Police sedans. They have the Ford Police SUVs, as well as trucks. So we're talking Yukons and Expeditions and Toyota trucks, Dodges, Chevys, Fords, vans, that type of thing. And there's a couple of three reasons for why X Government Cars is great, especially if you're in business and you're looking for work trucks, SUVs, vans, and more. The three-day peace of mind guarantee, so you buy with confidence. Fast financing for all credit levels at xgovernmentcars.com. And they take trades, and they pay the highest values for trades every day, and there's no bull. Ed has often talked about that, and I've seen him do it, as I said, in other commercials that I've done for X Government Cars. I've had three Crown Vicks and, of course, mobile podcast command. So check out xgovernmentcars.com in Forest Lake. You can drive through the lot, see what they've got, or call them 763-777-8782, and everybody knows that, you know, I've got the bullhorn that gives out their website.
xgovernmentcars.com.
Okay, here's segment two of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. To hear more of the Bob Davis Podcast, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. It's called the autonomous automobile, the driverless car, and it's coming, and it's going to change the urban environment in ways our current planners simply can't predict and are unprepared for. 2 weeks ago, I did a podcast about Minneapolis and St. Paul's Metropolitan Council, and it's been emulated by other cities, but we have a council here in Minneapolis and St. Paul that's appointed by the governor that has state power. It has legal authority to conduct pretty extensive planning, which cities have to sign on with. And I interviewed a small town mayor who has figured out that there's two statutes that need to be amended or repealed to deal with the power of this council. I also learned in the process, and some people might be surprised to hear this, state power over cities is greater than federal power over states because states have something called the 10th Amendment, and cities don't have the 10th Amendment. So they don't have any real recourse against an overbearing state power in the form of a Met Council, and I find that fascinating. So the result of this, even if something like the Met Council, for example, is considered to be politically liberal, you end up seeing plans developed which are based on some very old ideas. They're based on this central city development idea, trains and streetcars, high-density housing, high-density subsidized development, what do they call that? Regentrification, moving poor people out of neighborhoods to regentrify old buildings, high-density housing I mentioned, highways and transit systems, which all point to downtown. And in the case of trains, they can't be moved or adjusted once they're built. So you end up having to build lots of train lines, and they're very expensive to build. Central planning structures basically direct resources. So they direct tax dollars and legislative initiatives. Some might say they malinvest or they divert unjustifiably these resources to projects that envision the 20th century city, either, as I said, from the early 1900s or the 1950s. This, you know, sort of almost utopian vision of city center and people going to work in the city center and living and working downtown in the city center as they did in the 1920s when things were wonderful, and going to the chocolate shop and going to the crystal shop and buying the tablecloth from the, you know, the whatever the store that sold the tablecloths, you know, people living and working and commuting from already dense, transit-fed, semi-suburban neighborhoods with vertical apartment buildings and multi-use on the ground floor to more dense vertical office space downtown with parking and recreational spaces. And the idea that everybody's going, all roads lead to downtown, which, as I'll tell you later, they don't. And then you have parking garages and office space and other things managed by city government and Uber planning groups with tax increment financing for development and lots of tax breaks for bringing your office in, for bringing corporate offices into the city, and so forth. And in a state like Minnesota, they will say, you know, we enjoy this tremendous economic success in Minnesota because of this. But sometimes just because you have a great economy in a state isn't necessarily caused by this kind of planning, because the question comes up, well, what if this vision is wrong? And this is where we get back to the Curbed article, because the Curbed article, in a very innocent way, talks about the driverless car, the autonomous automobile. Now, we are told increasingly that we are 50 years away from such a thing. It will never work. It will never come about. It is a pig in a poke or a pipe dream or any of this. Too many problems. But as the article points out, scientists and technologists, as well as corporations and entrepreneurs, are already discussing car design, the economic impact of robotic cars, and how mass introduction of these tools, and that's what they are tools, will change our lives. So the guy that wrote the article's name is Kinder Baumgartner. It's from Houston, And what happened was the city came to him and suggested that he do some planning for the freeway system. And he asked them, should I do some planning for the driverless car? Because it looks like we might have a lot of them by 2035. And the city said, yes, we need you to plan for the potential of a driverless car. Because if we have a lot of driverless cars by 2035, it's going to change the urban landscape significantly, because it's going to change the need for large freeway systems. And let me tell you why he says this. Autonomous cars will need less space because they use managed lanes. They can go faster with less width and length for each car. The cars have higher safety thresholds, so everything can be more compact, which means you need less space for freeways. You need less space for parking garages because you're not going to leave your car sitting in a garage all day. You're going to need less space for parking lots at shopping centers. Baumgartner believes autonomous cars are going to create huge pools of parking garages and parking lots, which will be empty. So huge pools of open space at these parking lots and shopping centers and freeways. You won't need a car in the suburbs. You won't need the garage in your house as much as you do today if you have a car or two. You won't need to park the car on the street anymore. Suddenly, even in the suburbs, the streets will be clear. So what are you going to do with that space? Now, there's a bunch of cars parked on my street. If people didn't need cars to go to work, then what do we do with that space? And I'm not saying that all of a sudden this just appears, this space, but I think it's interesting that people are thinking about this. Well, the truth is that freeways will shrink considerably, according to this article, and it makes sense. Again, a lot of these parking garages will end up as what he calls feral space, wild space. And he also said, I don't expect development of this space to be centrally planned because it's going to be far too much space for parks and recreation and states to reclaim it. It will cost too much. Now, think about this, and this is really important when we consider the planning of these over, I like to refer to them as Uber agencies. People do not work downtown. Most people work in various rings around the cities. They are not going downtown. They are taking trips to different locations across different parts of the city at different times, whether their yoga class is at 4:30 or they go to the Costco at 7 a.m. or 4 p.m., whether they work the third shift or the second shift or the first shift at a hospital down on 169 and Hopkins Crossroads. Autonomous cars may provide transportation to these different trips more efficiently and cheaper than trains or even buses. And yet, what are we doing? We're investing billions in that kind of infrastructure, in light rail. We're investing billions in transit and personnel for transit. Or in some cases, we're investing in heavy rail like the North Star Line or some of these big city transportation systems where they do have high density, like New York. Coming up, new tech is having its greatest impact in industry, on the factory floor, and in retail. Like urban planners and the driverless car, politics seems to be behind the curve. Next. This is the Bob Davis Podcast's radio show.
This transmission is coming to you.
We've got it.
This transmission is coming to you. This transmission is coming to you.
We've got it. We've got it.
You know, I was just talking earlier about heading out in Mobile Podcast Command, and one of the things I want to do is go again to the Big Air Show at Oshkosh with my Alpha Systems people. It's so much fun. And if you're a pilot and you want to be safe on takeoffs and landings, then let me tell you about the digital sponsor of the Bob Davis Podcast, Alpha Systems. Alpha makes this revolutionary angle of attack indicator. What is it? Well, if you're a pilot, you already know that angle of attack is important on final approach, especially when you turn to make the final approach. That is where lives are saved by AOA because you have a visual indicator of your angle of attack. That's so important. And that's what it's all about. Bottom line, Alpha Systems AOA saves lives. They started the AOA revolution. Lots of new developments. So check out the Alpha Systems banners at the top of the BobDavisPodcasts.com. It will take you to their website. They've got videos and all kinds of content that explains how it all works. Alpha System. Let's get into segment three. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. New technology is impacting business too, and in some surprising ways. Our leaders seemingly have no clue about how quickly tech will change employment, compensation, and international trade. I talk about the video that I posted on my page with the guy that had, they've built a drone that can be operated by an individual. And, you know, it's just personal flight, basically. And it's probably going to be FAA approved. And they showed this guy flying this thing. So here's another disjointed piece, a story that I came up with. And I think this is an interesting story. So you hear lots of talk about manufacturing in this country on the campaign trail. You're hearing a lot of talk about that kind of stuff in Europe. And this is that all the jobs went to China and that we need to bring all the jobs back from China to the United States. And suddenly the people, the 94 million people who are out of the workforce will be employed at the steel mills and the coal mines and all will be well. And that's a nice idea. So it depends on who you talk to and it depends on what you look at in terms of charts. But manufacturing output is up in the United States, and it's up in the United States with fewer employees. In fact, it's following the same track that agriculture followed at the turn of the century, meaning the 1900s, the turn of the 20th century. Most people in this country lived in farm towns and they were employed in some form of agriculture. And that changed very, very much. But at the same time, agricultural output increased exponentially. And today, a very small number of farmers comparatively produce far more than they ever produced in the early 1900s. So it's going to be the same thing with manufacturing. Some futurists suggest that in the third wave of technology development, sometimes they call it the fourth wave or the second wave, but third wave will do in this sense, that in this third wave of technology development, collaborative efforts will spread from Silicon Valley into cheaper Rust Belt cities where there is already some degree of skill in certain areas. So Toledo is really good with metals, semiconductors in Albany. I don't know what Detroit, I suppose Detroit would be automotive, and to a lesser extent Chicago, and Gary and Cleveland will have to plan this. The other piece of this manufacturing thing is the cost of manufacturing in China, which is a former low-cost leader, are rising very quickly, and it's allowing space for new low-cost labor leaders like Vietnam to come in and enjoy a brief momentary advantage. But China is already investing in automation and robotics. I just mentioned that Foxconn, which is the maker of the iPhone in China, has already replaced 60,000 of its workers with robotics. So that's a piece. There are all sorts of tools being developed that are actually semi-autonomous. I guess you could call it that. I don't know what the actual technical term for it is, but I'm going to say it's semi-autonomous. This is a system where you combine elements of robotics with human beings. And the way this works, this is this thing called Beam. And what Beam does is it allows you to use robotic tools that can be attached to the system that moves around using teleconferencing, so you can move around a plant or a store or a facility and you can see the thing that you're doing and the thing that you're talking to or seeing can see what you're doing, but you've got all these other tools that you operate. In fact, they have a Beam store in San Francisco that is operated by people from remote locations. There's no human beings in the store. There are just these robotic things that are operated by people from remote locations all over the world. It's pretty interesting. So it's a robot video conference hybrid. And as I said, it's a robot body which can be fitted with tools and extra arms and, you know, operatives. The reason that they did this is that scientists said it's going to take us so long to get robots to be able to think as quickly and independently as human beings. What if we combined human beings with some sort of robotic technology? The other thing is that across the country, we're seeing digital cashiers proliferate like ATMs did 40 years ago, like self-serve gas did 40 years ago, except this time it's going to happen much quicker. They're going to be much more powerful, and it will change the basis of labor. And I could go on for hours about tech. Some of it is certainly pie in the sky, but much of it, a lot of it, is already happening. You know, they say you go from an idea and research to technology, and then technology to industry. And that is what we're in this phase where a lot of this stuff is being converted into industry. And some of it is pie in the sky, and some of it won't work, but some of it is going to begin to happen, and it's going to have profound effects on our world. What's happening is we're not talking about this stuff. I see all this stuff on YouTube and on Instagram now. There's now an affordable 3D desktop printer that you can use to print designs from the internet, or you can use CAD apps to design your own stuff and print it at home, in chocolate if you want, from your smartphone. So the next iteration of smartphone technology will be faster and better, and then there will be more robust communications and communication systems. And those things have already disrupted the media. They're disrupting politics as well, as we have discussed. And I think they challenge the standard idea of what the city looks like and doesn't look like. So at this time, as the first edge of a real revolution is coming through, you hear people at Tea Party meetings talking about revolution, and you hear Black Lives Matter talking about revolution, and you hear La Raza talking about revolution, and you hear Bernie Sanders talking about revolution. This is a real this is a revolution that will probably have more impact in 50 years than the Industrial Revolution ever dreamed of having on its most hopeful day. And, you know, some of it's good because we can't see the opportunity that is going to be created, but we're definitely in the process of the beginning stages of a real, real revolution. So what are we doing to deal with this revolution? We're doing things like passing laws regarding higher minimum wage in state legislatures, and certainly we're doing things by executive order at the federal level regarding minimum wage and changing overtime rules so that people on lower wage scales or hour scales have to be paid more for overtime, and that's going to change the nature of how much corporations pay for people to do what they need to do, and you're going to see all sorts of adjustments of the labor force. We are seeing the adaptation of automation, electronic ordering, and cashier type of systems in service industries, just as people and politicians are demanding laws on minimum wages, just as unions are trying to organize, workers to prevent those systems from being put in place. And all the political and legal infrastructure of the city seems to be moving backward toward this early 20th century model. And I wrote here, well, it could work very well, or it might fail spectacularly. Well, I don't think it will work very well. I think it is failing spectacularly in some places, and I think it will fail spectacularly in other places. I live in Minneapolis and St. Paul, and I hear all the time, we'll never be Detroit. Well, the thing is, Detroit's a good 100 years ahead of Minneapolis and St. Paul, so it's hard to tell whether we will be like Detroit or not if we continue to follow this idea of these highly expensive public infrastructure system with lots of employees, lots of rules, and lots of regulations, and, you know, these sclerotic governmental systems. The problem is we're not allowing form to follow function. In other words, we're not forming systems for in our state governments based on the function of these new tools. What we're doing is we're trying to force function to follow form. We're not creating structures that allow for flexibility. I think that's so important. I've talked about the Jeffersonian ideal of a very diffused republic, which kind of got thrown on the ash heap of history, but we kind of can pull it back because maybe that sort of libertarian vision of a very weak federal government and a very strong state system, more like the United Provinces back in the day in the Netherlands, might actually be the right system. Next, as technology changes, we have to change. What about our leaders? Are they changing? This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. once again, really happy to accept your donations for Mobile Podcast Command right under the big yellow donate button on the BobDavisPodcast.com. You click on that, it takes you to PayPal, and you can make a secure contribution to Mobile Podcast Command, which goes exclusively for diesel fuel and you know, the beef jerky that I eat from Trader Joe's, which is awesome, and, of course, Komodo Dragon Coffee, because that's all I do when I'm on the road is just drive and go and cover things and eat beef jerky and lose weight. I also buy macadamia nuts that goes with the beef jerky. It's really good. If you ever taste like peanut butter, it's just weird. So, yeah, I know I'm weird. Anyway, appreciate it and appreciate the donations for Mobile Podcast Command, which came from ex-government cars in Forest Lake, Minnesota, now open at 356 19th Street. They've got the Ford, the Chevy, the Dodges, the Toyotas, lots of trucks, lots of cars, the Impalas, the Crown Vicks, the Chargers, and more. Don't forget they pay the highest values for trades every day without the bull. They have the 3-day peace of mind guarantee. And, of course, they're standing by to help you out. And, yeah, here's the bullhorn again, xgovernmentcars.com.
xgovernmentcars.com.
And don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating in Minneapolis. You call 612-927-6488. In St. Paul, 651-224-4771 for emergency service, heating and air conditioning and plumbing. They can get a plumber to you metro-wide from St. Paul. That means the suburbs too. It means Plymouth. It means Invergrove. It means South St. Paul. It means West St. Paul. 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488 or RyanPlumbing.com. Okay, here's the final segment of this week's Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. You're listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Remember, for all the Bob Davis podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcast.com. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. It's a simple question, the question nobody seems to be asking in politics these days. Given the changes coming based on the technology building blocks that are a revolution, They aren't asking, what do we need? The examples of the things we shouldn't be doing? More bureaucracy, not less. We need less bureaucracy. We've got to have more efficient government, which means less government, because we know that government as a rule is not efficient. If you want an example, you know, the Affordable Care Act was supposed to create portable, manageable health insurance. And what we got is United Health pulling out because it's costing them too much. And we got the post office. And the solution? A bigger post office. Universal health care. We need entrepreneurs, and we need entrepreneurial thinking. Entrepreneurs are collaborative as individuals, and they operate as individuals, but they're willing to see the value in collaborating with people if it can help them make money, and they have to think creatively. And we are putting people through an education system that is still based on the 1950s at best, and it forces conformance. It forces the idea that we create skilled laborers who are high school graduates, and the college graduates are the middle managers in gray flannel whose job is to open and close the gate. And while all this is going on, the nature of employment itself is changing. People suddenly can be free agents, and I've talked about this 100 times in the podcast. I think it's one of the best things about this age, and we are at the very dawn of it, where a woman who's a mother can begin the transition out of her job by starting her own company on her kitchen table and promote it using all of the skills of social media and make her company look just like a huge company online. So these things are changing the nature of work. What is work? Where do I work? How do I work? How do I get there? And what's happening in return with that is the nature of the corporation is changing. Companies don't necessarily pay benefits or want to pay benefits anymore. They don't necessarily want to use full-time employees anymore because it's not the 1950s. You don't have a job for life, and you wouldn't want a job for life because something else is going to come up that's really cool that you're going to want to do. People use the tools available to them. If they're smart, they use their smartphone. They use cloud computing. They use sophisticated software to provide services or do what they do better. whereas before they never had the chance to do that. Or they're providing low-tech services, you know, yoga teaching, in-home yoga teaching, massage, personal training, all this type of thing. But they're using high-tech systems to market and schedule their work so that they can, again, amplify what it is that they do. So this is the beginning of a great age that we can do these things. Why wouldn't the driverless car, why wouldn't the Jeffersonian system of diffused government be more effective for creating, you know, a faster growth curve for these kinds of things so that we can all be happy. You know, there are just too many examples of how new technology is revolutionizing the old industrial world, whether it's making the same amount of steel that 5,000 guys on three shifts used to have to make with 12 or 13 or 50 people, or something like doing podcasts. Some call it the second industrial revolution or the third or fourth wave. Whatever its name, it is happening, and it is happening faster and faster and faster, and you see it in the politics. But the solutions being offered don't solve. They are right now, the solutions that all these people are offering really complicate everything. What we need to do is reset. We need to reset away from Republican and Democrat, away from right and left, away from right and wrong and independent. And very few see this. And I'm not saying throw the baby out with the bathwater. I'm not saying throw your principles away. If you're on the left, your principles of, you know, being concerned about individuals and human beings and the forest and all that stuff. If you're on the right, the idea that the government should be curtailed, don't throw this, the principles away. But let's talk about the new technology revolution that sweeps anything that doesn't work away. This is a river of change, and nothing will be the same once it starts to crest, and we are a long way from the crest yet. Lots of surprises are coming. And I think what I've been trying to say is that we need to change our minds, not them. We keep talking about them. They're doing this to us. They're doing that to us. It's we who need to change our minds. And we need to move away from centralized structures in our minds. And a lot of us have been raised with centralized structures. So we think in those terms. It doesn't mean we don't have regional planning or government structures, but maybe what changes is the authority of those regional planning capabilities from autocratic to being more collaborative with individual citizens. From saying this is the way it should be versus saying, hey, let's figure out something that works and see how we can work together and be a resource to people, whether you're a boss or whether you're the Met Council. Now, I hate to look at small countries and say, this is how it should be done, because the country I'm going to talk about only has 1.3 million people, which is basically a city-state, and this is the country of Estonia. But Estonia stands out from Eastern European former communist countries in a substantially different way in terms of economics. Estonia decided at the end of the Soviet Empire to completely break with the past and reset. And they really kept nothing of the old. They replaced their hoary old, socialist economy with a market-driven economy. They have an advanced tool in a computer system that allows all citizens unparalleled access to tax documents, data, other kinds of federal documents. They can get licenses and permits in hours in Estonia that take weeks, months, or years in other countries, including the United States. And just as an aside, on the same front, Chile is also doing some amazing things. You know, Chile has, or Chile, as I used to call it, they have a completely privatized social security system that people manage themselves from ATMs. In Estonia, children as young as 7 are taught the principles and basics of coding. You hear all this talk about the ghetto in this country and the low-income areas and the education, and these education structures are impossible. You can't fix these schools because there's so much legal corruption in the school systems. Nobody ever talks about teaching kids in low-income areas like Compton and North Minneapolis. Let's teach these kids. Let's take them out of the system, put them somewhere, and start over and teach them how to code immediately. Let's just go take it to the next level and see what happens. Estonia has the most competitive tax system in the world. They have a 21% corporate tax rate. They have a nearly flat 21% personal income tax rate. They allow companies a full expensing of capital investment, which is tax-free But as soon as you start giving the money out in dividends, then it's taxed. So it encourages companies putting money back into the companies. They use blockchain encryption for medical and financial data for individuals. So their financial and medical data system is like Bitcoin, and it provides a good base if they ever wanted to move to a Bitcoin type of currency. And then finally, this is a place where a lot of new tech companies are headquartering, and it's easy for you or me as a citizen of the United States. We could actually become citizens of Estonia very easily. So it's also kind of a cyber country in an odd sort of way. Now, I'm not suggesting that a country of 350 million people can become Estonia, and I don't think we would want to become Estonia. But look at the ideas that they're working with, and look at the ideas that we're working with. Individual states could start experimenting with these ideas. Why not Minnesota? Why not? Let's talk about fixing education by resetting it completely. Why not starting to teach kids in the lowest income areas how to code, for example? Why not move to a flat state tax? Why not streamline state agencies? Why not, as opposed to this is how we've always done it before, or this is the way these systems have to be done, or let's have some more bureaucracy, or let's hire some more employees to do things. Why not put plans for centralized planning agencies and institutions like Minsure and Light Rail, for example, on hold in the short term and maybe get rid of them in the long term? Because I think we're heading in a certain direction, and I think our leaders think that we're headed in a different direction, and that is not a recipe for success. Well, that's going to do it for this installment of the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Hope you enjoyed a departure from politics a little bit to talk about technology. If you want to hear more of the Bob Davis Podcasts, visit thebobdavispodcasts.com. If you want to hear more of this show plus a lot of other great shows, visit gcnlive.com. And of course, I'll be back next week, same time, same station. I love saying that. This is the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show, which airs on the radio at the Patriot in Minneapolis and St. Paul, 4 p.m. on Saturdays. Thank you for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn, BlogTalkRadio.com, of course, the Patriot, as well as GCNLive.com, which is the syndicator for the show. And as we get new affiliates, I will let you know. And thanks for listening and sharing and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. I am the Bob Davis Podcast. On Instagram at Bob Davis Podcast, on Twitter, and you can find me on Facebook. And thanks again for your donations for Mobile Podcast Command at thebobdavispodcast.com. Well, I'm going to hang out. It's Friday. It's the weekend. Hope you enjoy yours. Thanks for listening to podcast 508, the Bob Davis Podcast Radio Show.